Recording pocket.
It's time now for the chipping forecast, issued by Folding Pocket on behalf of Andrew Cotter, Eddie Pepperell, and special guest Ian Carter.
Hello there and welcome to Saturday night at the Master, Sunday morning probably where you are listening, and it is the chipping forecast and we're here to round up round three and look ahead to the final round of the 2024 Masters. I am Andrew Cotter and alongside me is our special guest Ian Carter, BBC Radio golf correspondent who has just finished commentating on day three. I would say, Ian, a very good day.
I think it was one of the vintage Masters days. I think it's really nice to have you in here, actually, in our studio, but it's where I sit, and there's just a bank of screens in here. The number of screens that I have on the go, all at once, to just stay on top of everything. And we have the team out on the course as well. I was out on the course yesterday, which was a real treat. But as far as today, third round day at the Masters was concerned, one of the best I've seen. I thought it was just, it had everything.
It was good. I missed a lot of it. I was watching some of it because I'm in the press centre. I mean, you're speaking as if you're welcoming me into this world, as if I've not been here before. I was once of this parish.
Yes, you were, but you weren't during the time that we're in this facility, which is really special, isn't it? I got a message on Twitter from someone
on X
who just said, got under my skin a bit, this.
Oh really? Okay.
You look so right. Not only are our BBC license fees being used to pay for the annual Masters Jamboree. BBC Five Lives football presenter and commentators, we're also paying for Ian Carter Golf to tell us what he can see live on his monitor. Surely they could all do that from a UK studio.
I mean, so anybody who uses the word jamboree, unless they are a scout leader, that's not. Yep. That's the trigger word for someone who's, you know, that person is just angry at the license fee anyway. So we've talked about this on the podcast before. In 2004, we started going out to points on the course. It's not just about the fact that there are points out. So Alistair Bruce Ball and Cat Downs and John Murray are out on the course. You've been out on the course as well. But you're here and you're speaking to players. You're speaking to caddies. You're speaking to coaches. Yes, technically you could sit at home and commentate off a monitor, but I guarantee it wouldn't be as good.
But I wouldn't have been talking to leading officials from the European Tour this morning, to John Rahm's manager, to all the other people that you
me
bump into.
Talking to Jay Monahan as Andrew Coulthard.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Have you mentioned that?
I did mention it last night, yeah.
So anyway, look, I get it. I get it that it's very easy to think that there's no real benefit to being here if you are commentating off the TV monitor, but believe me, there is, because you get a feel for the place, you get a feel for the chat, you get to hear from the players, and it's very important, I think, that we are here to bear witness to what is fantastic sport, and this was fantastic sport today.
And one thing that's very clear is that nobody is paying for the chipping forecast to be out here. So other than me. So this is no jamboree. This is whatever this is a jamber not tree. In fact, Eddie compared us last night to a reduced price Terry's chocolate orange, which I felt a bit harsh, on sale for £1 at Lidl. I think he was saying that they sell.
Discount code.
That's the discount code. Well, no discount code, Ian. But his comparison was that they sell a lot because they're so cheap, but you're not actually making any more profit. And we as a podcast are riding high in the charts just now because we're churning out the content. We're just, every night we're bringing little gems and nuggets from the Masters and just reading the leaderboard off a monitor. So anyway, here we are, a bargain, yet possibly slightly chalky chocolate confectionery. That's what we are, with the box damaged. A big discount sticker on it. But this is with our discount code. So just a reminder of how things stand at the end of the third round. Scottie Scheffler, 7-under. Colin Morikawa, 6-under. Max Homa, 5-under. Ludwig Ober, 4-under. DeChambeau, 3-under. Xander Schauffele, 2-under. Cameron Davis, 2-under. Nikolai Højgaard, 2-under. Then you've got a group on 1-under. Ben Ann, Cameron Smith, Cameron. You have so many Camerons. And Tommy Fleetwood, all 1-under par. So, I mean, Scottie Scheffler, we'll start at the top. Scottie Scheffler, it was admirable from him today, because I think it showed his mentality, because things were getting away from him. What, double bogey, bogey on 10, 11, and he's missing putts as well. But then comes back.
Yeah, so the double bogey on 10 really came from nowhere, because he'd missed the green. He just looked like he'd just got the wrong club and gone all the way through the back of the green. And then he hit one of those chips where you try and hit it into the bank to sting it, but he actually airmailed the bank and it ran all the way to the front of the green. Then he hit a fantastic putt up to, well, I'd given it to him, and then missed the two-footer, and all of a sudden it's a double bogey. And the sort of thing... Yes, we've talked about the rockiness with the putter at length, but just so unexpected. And then dropped a shot on 11, and you think, wow, he's really wobbling. But then sensational putt. What a roar that greeted that eagle on 13. And the birdie, as good an approach, and I saw pretty much all of them going into 18 today, and capitalizing on that. And that was the hallmark of a champion in waiting.
Well, we'll come to the other contenders in a minute, but just on the sort of knife edge that you are on when you play at Augusta, tightrope, whatever other metaphors, etc. Because you know, a birdie to finish with for Scottie Scheffler, DeChambeau holdout for a ridiculous birdie. Whereas others, I went to interview Tyrrell Hatton because I thought it was going well. It'd be nice to get a little... And of course, you go up there and you wait to interview them, and you don't see what they're doing on the 18th.
Because we'd had a discussion beforehand, and we talked about potential interviewees to drop into the pod. Tyrrell would be good to talk to.
Play with Tiger.
And he was going along nicely. And then when I saw what he did on 18, where he had one of those where the ball hit the edge of the hole and then accelerated off the hole. And we saw that so many times, and that speaks to the speed of the greens. And it horseshoed away 9 feet, and he missed the one coming back up the hill. And I thought, not going to get it. Did you speak to him?
I did speak to him. And I mean, I don't know whether we should play, so I don't think we will. It wasn't an outstanding interview, but you spoke about it the other day. You know, we've been critical of Tyrrell Hatton and his sort of conduct on the course, and you just get so exasperated with it, as he gets exasperated with his game and swearing, whatever it was. But actually, you know, he came and spoke, and he was, you know, he's good to talk to. He's engaging, and he's softly spoke, quiet, and you think,
he just kind of gets it out of his system immediately. Looks a bit of an idiot at the time, and thereafter is a perfectly sane and affable human being.
But the gist of his interview was that he just can't, Augusta, you don't get rewarded for good shots. So I think he has that in his head. But you know, the world number one's up at the top, and the cream rises to the top of Augusta. So I think there's a little bit in his head that it's not a fair golf course, but it is a fair golf. It's just a very challenging golf course.
It is. And Scheffler hit, as I say, one of the best shots on that day into 18, capitalized on it, hold the putt. It was going nowhere else, that birdie putt from, it was only 5 feet, but he had to guide it down the slope, little bit of break from left to right. And the way that he celebrated, that's as animated as I've seen Scottie Scheffler. And he's not someone who's sort of prone to histrionics, as we know, but that meant so much to him to make that birdie, just nudge himself ahead of the pack.
Yes. Well, the other British player that I went to speak to was Tommy Fleetwood, because he was going very, very nicely indeed. So he bogeys the last as well.
Just three-putted it, didn't he?
Three-putted it. For example, at that stage, because Scheffler had just gone back to six and he was two under par, and you think, I think it's still unlikely if you're within three or four on the final day, but it's far more likely than as he is now six behind. But he bogeyed the last, but he obviously is a good guy as well. He came and spoke, and this was Tommy with his frustrations after the 18th hole.
Yeah, of course, the last is disappointing. It's a really tricky green, the last, and I think coming down the stretch then, the greens were getting so firm and burnt out. I didn't really leave myself the nicest putt, really, but you still should probably hold them. But it is what it is, and I'll practice a little bit after today and hopefully come out again tomorrow.
Is this as hard as you've seen Augusta play?
I think so, yeah. I think just not receptive at all today. The wind was still pretty strong today. I think it probably is as tough as I've probably played it, yeah.
Do you still have goals? I mean, what, six back at the moment? Is that a bit of a stretch?
who knows? We'll see. I think just continue to play. There's still a full day's play to go, and see where I can get. You know, just continue to try and play well and do the right things and play this golf course as it should be played. And we'll see where I finish. Obviously, there's certain things. I would love my highest finish ever at the Masters. I would love to get up there and get a hot start tomorrow and feel like I can go into the back nine with a chance. And you know, we'll just see. It's great being out there, and still tomorrow's a Masters Sunday. It's very, very special, and I'm at, you know, the right end of the leaderboard, if you like. So yeah, give it a go.
Just one final thing. I know you've been sort of without him for a while, Finno, but is it strange being out there without your usual bagman, because he's been with you for so long?
Yeah, of course. I mean, God, like 8 years, and maybe he didn't do one event. So there's a huge, like, comfort factor there, and you know, familiarity just with him being out there, and it is different. But I'm having a fantastic time with Gray, and he's been amazing, and I hope he's having a good time with me. And yeah, it is different. But you know, all I want to do is, you know, hope he gets better and gets back out here soon. And for the time being, you know, just keep trying to improve and play golf. But yeah, for sure, Finno, looking forward to when he does come back out.
Have a good one tomorrow.
Thanks, Andrew.
So there is Tommy Fleetwood. Well, three times he's been in the top 10 going into the final round of a Masters before. So it's four now. And on the final day, each of those previous times, he's fallen away. I think it's time for Fleetwood to... Not there's no pressure on him tomorrow, but he's not expecting to challenge for the green jacket itself. But I think it would be very good for him in majors if he were to finish strongly and get it. Maybe even get it, you know, a top five finish.
But I think anyone who's under par at this stage, and the leaders at seven under par, they have to have in mind that it will be set up on the back nine to potentially yield birdies and potentially eagles on 13 and 15 and... a gathering pin position on 16, who knows, you could make a hole in one, do something spectacular there. And what you have to do is almost, I would suggest anyway, and who am I to say it, but it strikes me that you have to get through that front nine, take whatever chances you can, but just don't play away the opportunity to try and make those scores on the back nine, because as we know, anything can happen.
Well, while I was waiting for Tommy to sign and to speak to Sky, I had a chat with Mark Steinberg. And Mark Steinberg was saying they are going to water the living daylights out of the course tonight, because they want it to be... That's exactly what they want it to be.
So
they
manager
want it to be
of Tiger Woods.
Yeah, manager
Justin
of Tiger Woods, Justin Rose, Matt Fitzpatrick. Yeah. And they want it to be a challenge as it has been so far, and then just let them go on the final day. Yeah. And I think that's what... So I think despite the fact that it's been dry and it's dry and sunny tomorrow, the conditions are going to be... perfect tomorrow, but it's going to be just that fraction softer. So if you do get out there and get a low number, then you could put pressure on the leaders. But of course, Scottie Scheffler is probably going to be making birdies as well.
Well, he is. But if the people ahead of him are making inroads on the leaderboard, that then applies pressure. And I just think that with Augusta, and it, you know, this goes to what Rory McIlroy was saying right at the start of the week. You've got to have that patience. Don't play yourself out of it, because if pressure comes onto the scoreboard, then you can be sucked into taking on shots that you shouldn't take on, and that's when you get into trouble. Whereas if you can keep your card clean, maybe pick up a birdie or two at the second and at the eighth, then all of a sudden you're right in the mix. It doesn't matter if Scottie Scheffler's at the top of the leaderboard. He is a human being, and he might be susceptible to that pressure, and he'll have a few demons in his head, certainly around 10 and 11 from the third round.
And also, I think Colin Morikawa. Now, Colin Morikawa has not or had not been in good form. Then he won the Zozo. So Colin Morikawa, just to give you a brief history of his last couple of seasons. You know, when he won the PGA in 2020 and the Open in 2021, you thought, wow, he's going to kick on from here. But then back issues and his format. So he switched coach. He switched to an English coach, Mark Blackburn, last September, who also coaches Rose and Max Homa. And that sort of paid dividends with the win in the Zozo. And he had a decent finish earlier in the season. He's tailed off recently, but now he seems to be right back to just about at his best. Now, Colin Morikawa at his best is a player that any of the... big lions in the on the prairie, this the veldt would take in the forest. Where do lions live? They'd all take notice of another big lion in Colin Morikawa.
Yes, but I think that, you know, he had his good round today. He had his low round today. Anyone breaking 70 in the third round, they had a fantastic day.
Yeah.
And as we know, backing it up 2 days running is something that only the absolute greats seem to be able to do, especially on a major stage. So I think more likely the threat will come from Max Homer.
Do you think
because
so?
Homer created plenty of opportunities. I love the way that he was hitting that low trajectory, very controlled off the tee, hitting fairways, hitting greens, and just not making a putt. Not a single birdie in the third round, just the one drop shot that came at the 12th. And we were talking in commentary with Trish Johnson, and she was just saying, you know, on a day like that, you go away from it and think to yourself, well, I am due a little bit of change in fortune. And if he suddenly starts seeing the ball drop in and a couple of early birdies, then, you know, he's got a platform from which to accelerate from.
I just think because of Morikawa's pedigree in the major. So Max Homer, his 10th place in the Open last year was his first and only top 10 in a major. I know he's a very different creature now. He's so impressive at the Ryder Cup.
I think that's a big thing as well.
It is a big thing. I just think that Morikawa at his best, and you know, there are a lot of memories in there of major contention and winning majors. Well, it's interesting. Hey, and I would say a big shout out to Mark Blackburn if he's got Homer as a client and Colin Morikawa. So well done. As I mentioned, he's an Englishman. He went to college in the States in the 90s in Mississippi, stayed there, has built this academy, and what a reputation he's building now. So well done, Mark Blackburn. I don't think he's from Blackburn. I don't know where he's from England, but
I don't know. But Ludwig.
Well, that's the other thing.
So other one to talk about.
So I mean, that's a good group as well to be in, because he will be playing with Homer in the second last one. Now, I think that's quite a nice grouping for Obert to be playing with Homer. And so he's 4 under par at the moment, 3 behind Scheffler. But I don't think, talk about the Ryder Cup experience being so good for Homer, for Ludwig Åberg as well, that, you know, the pressure of a Ryder Cup is very, very different. Everybody says it's more intense than the majors. Now, the Masters is something extraordinary, obviously, on the Sunday coming down the stretch, but I think that will have prepared him pretty well for this challenge.
Very much so. And remember, it's his first major, never mind his first
extraordinary
Masters.
It's
so
extraordinary.
To have done what he has done, 73 in the first round, 69 in the second round, 70 in the third round. That is just extraordinary in these conditions. He can't have played on these kind of greens and this kind of setup very often at all. And it's just that unflappable way. As soon as he addresses the ball, boomf, the shot goes. And he looks very, very comfortable out there. Noticed he spits a little bit on the course.
Does he?
That's the only downside I can see. I thought he was perfect.
Yeah, but he expectorates.
But yes.
Well, I haven't gone off him. He's great. And he's ours. He belongs to the Chipping Forecast because of what we...
And he was introduced on the tee as Ludwig Åberg.
Was he?
Yes, he was.
Well, they've got to. Whoever did his introduction on the first tee on the Thursday, they've carted him off.
And in the media centre when he was brought in for interview.
Mm.
Announced as Ludwig Åberg.
Well, I mean, honestly, we've done fantastic
work. I think it's Åberg on the television now.
It is Åberg. They're giving it the hard G. Yeah. So I don't think we can look beyond the last two groups, really, realistically. Although Bryson DeChambeau holding that, what a way to finish. And he is the kind of player now, because he is one of the big dogs on the prairie with the lions and the hippos. You could see him doing something.
Yeah, I just felt that the vagaries of Augusta caught up with him. If I don't know if I'm being harsh to him, but it just feels like he is a little one-dimensional still. Mm. You know, those standard length irons that he uses, it's a very similar sort of game. And I just wonder about how he's reflecting on what he did on the 15th yesterday. I'd love to, you know, if Eddie had been here, I'd have been asking him about that choice that he made to go for it from behind the trees on 15.
Mm.
And he got got lucky, and maybe it was a tactical ploy to go out there. Maybe they'd scouted that as a bailout area, knowing that they'd be able to get a drop from the camera tower. And he, you know, he got a drop. He was able to actually place it, and then he duffed the wedge for the third shot. It went into the water, and ultimately he made his double bogey seven, then compounded it with three putts on the 16th, but then holds from the fairway from 90 yards out after chipping out from the woods on the 18th. So it was all a bit ragged and then very inspired at the end. But four shots behind, not too many players to overtake. If he got off to a hot start, he could apply pressure.
Yeah. Eddie would have said his shot into the water was like a dusty old bounty bar at the bottom of a rucksack or something.
No, like. at the bottom of a box of celebrations. Yeah, well, that nobody wanted.
I go for that. They're one of the first I go for. Yeah. I love bounties.
I like one of them. I like them all.
Good. Yes. And lots of other confectioneries are available.
I've got
Ian
recommends for you.
Have you? Hang on. Okay. This is a little bit of extra work for all our producers to do. This small chipolata.
You don't need to give the sting.
Okay, go on then.
But Ian recommends peanut butter and jelly sandwiches. You would get them here in a plastic packet. And they are just sensational.
Yeah, but Ian recommends is supposed to bring little niche things that nobody's heard of to our attention. We'll go, we'll try
them
out.
So good. I mean, it's a big thing in America, but...
Is it? I haven't heard of this. What, peanut butter and jelly?
And grape jelly sandwiches on wheat.
If you're an American listener, and we do have a few to the Chipping Forecast, and you're wondering why Ian is... He's like recommending water or orange juice or something like that. Anyway, Tiger Woods... Rather sad, 82, comfortably his worst round at the Masters. I think he'd had a couple of 78s before in 2022. Actually, it felt a bit like that 2022, making the cut and then just heading backwards, almost a bit like last year as well, making the cut and then withdrawing. He just looked broken today.
Didn't look like he was moving particularly well. He looked a bit beaten up.
He's not a four-round golfer anymore, is he?
No, that's the thing. You know, it's just asking... too much for him, I think, at this age and all the toll that has been taken on his body, and he was beaten up by the course today.
Yeah, well, we've got to get away because you're going to.
I'm going as well. I've got to go and do another. Well. I've got a curry on the go.
Yeah, I'm going to go and do the Masters podcast as well. You've got a curry. You're going to a curry house. That's what Augusta's known for. The Deep South. You go to. Oh, it's renowned for its Indian foods. So good choice. Rory, actually, he's playing with Neil Shipley, the amateur, which is quite nice for Tiger Woods playing with Neil Shipley. So that's good. The only amateur to make the cut.
So Shipley definitely in the butler cabin. Who is going to be the other player in there for sure? John Rahm.
I don't know.
The jacket.
Just quickly on McIlroy though, you can easily see him 21st now. You can easily see him shooting 66, 65, having a top 10 finish and it meaning nothing at all. I don't mean to smirk while I say that. It's frustrating watching him.
It is. And again, the putter was pretty cold and he's just not had his A game here. People will argue whether it's mental or technical. Maybe it's a bit of both. But I think it's just, I don't know what to say, really. So if he does shoot 65 in the final round, and he does finish in the top 10, what are we supposed to think?
Nothing of it. We just think that's a nice extra percentage for Harry Diamond, and it doesn't mean anything. It wouldn't mean anything to him either. He's playing with Joaquin Neiman in the final round, actually, so that would be an interesting one to watch. And you could see one of those two players having a low round early on and catapulting themselves up the board. That's what usually happens on a Masters Sunday.
And one thing to say, we got news through of the prize fund, because they don't really make a big thing of the prize fund at the Masters, but this is a $20 million Masters. So all the big events have to be $20 million. This applies pressure on the Open and the US Open, the USPGA, $3.6 million going to the winner, $2.16 to the second place, $1.36 million for third place. What do you think 25th place would yield?
A Terry's chocolate orange. I don't know. That's the thing. I don't like the fact that they're saying this is a $20 million event now, because it doesn't matter.
Well, people just saying it because it is.
No, it is. But I would quite like the majors just to say,
Actually, we're not going to pay any prize. It's about the glory. I'd like that.
And for almost all players who win majors, it wouldn't matter to them that there was no money involved.
So 25th, which is on the evidence of this week so far, that's probably where Rory McIlroy will finish, shall we say.
25th place.
Joaquin Niemann.
I don't know, $100,000?
$176,000.
25th. I mean, that's, you know,
that is a fantastic wage.
That's last annual place in a
salary,
tournament.
Isn't
it?
It is.
Of course it is. It's, it is extraordinary. Right, our picks, I think it would be an immense comfort to Brooks Koepka, Hideki Matsuyama and Shane Lowry that they're having a great contest for best pick by a Chipping Forecast presenter or guest. So Ian, you were Koepka.
Yeah.
He's six over. Yeah. Birdied 13, 14, 15, then a big old double in the 16th. I was Matsuyama, five over. I mean, it was only a late slip by a couple of players like Justin Thomas that got him in for the weekend. 71. So he's gone 76, 74, 71, Matsuyama. He's five over. And Eddie Lowry was the caddy for Francis Ouimet when he won the Open in 1913.
He was, yeah, the little lad.
He was 10 years old. Yeah. Do you know what Eddie Lowry... So he was the son of Irish immigrants, 10 years old, caddied for Francis Ouimet in that sort of legendary US Open where he beat Ted Ray and Harry Vardon, and they made a film about it and there's a book about it, The Greatest Game Ever.
The Greatest Game Ever, which is the best golf book I've ever
written.
Is it? Mark Frost.
You've ever written?
Ever read.
Really?
Mark Frost wrote it, and he was the guy who wrote Hill Street Blues.
Ah, was he?
Yes, and it's... when I became golf correspondent in 2003... I went and I bought that book just by chance and read it and devoured it. It is just the best book ever.
It's
just brilliant. It was made into a film. I've not seen the film, because the book was so good. I don't want to spoil the feel good.
Ian recommends. There we go.
The greatest game ever played or something like that.
So read that while eating a peanut butter and what was it you said? Jelly or
something? Yeah, peanut butter and grape jelly.
Amazing.
Which is grape jam.
Eddie Lowry, so he's the son of Irish immigrants, caddy for Francis Ouimet, went on to become a multimillionaire in San Francisco in car dealership.
Did you make this slip of the tongue just to get all this in?
No, every time I write down, because I've been writing down Eddie, open brackets, Lowry, just to remind me who he's running, is written down as Eddie Lowry.
Right.
So, and he sponsored young amateurs. Eddie Lowry went on to sponsor Ken Venturi. I think he gave him a job at his dealership. Yeah, so it's a, and he became friends with Bob Hope. It's an extraordinary story. There's a book, and someone must have written a book about Eddie Lowry.
Yeah.
But anyway, Shane Lowry, six over as well.
Who?
Me. Oh, God. Right, so Shane Lowry's six over, Koepka's six over, Matsuyama's five over, so we're having a good old tussle there. But I think
For 25th.
Who do you think is going to win?
I think it'll be Scheffler, but I don't think it'll be necessarily straightforward, and I think the biggest threat to him is either Max Homer or Ludvig Åberg.
I'd love Åberg to make a run.
Oh, that'd be amazing.
Make a run, anyway.
It'd be amazing.
Right, okay, that's it. Ian's looking forward to the final day. I am as well.
We've got commentary on 5 Live and BBC Sounds from 8 o'clock.
Okay.
So do join us for that. And there's in-play video on the BBC Sport website as well.
Okay, lots of people have been sending pictures of your book, having bought the book, and use the discount code. So we're not.
What
going
is
to
the discount code?
I don't
know. Bloomsbury.com.
Yeah, if you want to do that,
Did you put it in the pod yesterday?
Not last night. No.
No.
It was given a mention. This isn't a vehicle for your scribblings.
I can't even remember what it's called now.
Your book?
No, the discount code, but I'll have it for you tomorrow.
Anyway, good. Well, we look forward to that. We look forward to chatting to you after the final round of the Masters. Bye-bye for now.
Bye.
And that completes this edition of the Chipping Forecast. Wishing you a safe and pleasant night.
Folding Pocket.